This episode of 1 MHz is brought to you by Navis Pack and Ship. When you need to safely send or receive computers, art, electronics, or other hard-to-ship items, go Navis to solve your shipping problems at GONAVIS.com. From Toronto, Canada, this is 1 MHz, an Apple II podcast. In this episode, the secret hidden song title will be Rise and Fall by Madness. So I'll try to sneak that in and you try to spot it. One megahertz is recorded in Canada. So for my American listeners, the current conversion rate means that for you, this show is called 0.978 megahertz. Please adjust your listening speed accordingly.
Can I help you?
Yes. Well, maybe. I'm looking for one of those things that helps keep you organized. It's the sort of thing that tells you when you have to be somewhere.
Oh, the Casio Day Planner.
Right.
We're out of them. What do you want a toy like that for anyway?
Well, a friend of mine told me about it, and sometimes I'm not too organized.
Listen, show your friends a thing or two and stay one step ahead of obsolescence. I read that in a brochure.
Oh.
You want computer components. You know, like stereo equipment? Then you just update the part that gets outdated. What's your preference? Apple? Pear? Wang?
Oh, listen, I don't know anything about computers.
Nobody does. But don't you want one for when you do find out?
Hey kids, let's talk about a game. Oh, shocker. I want to talk about a game I've been playing recently called Archon, The Light and the Dark. It was originally developed for Atari computers, boo, but it was later ported, and by which I mean improved, to run on the Apple II. Oh, and they also threw in ports for the C64, the ZX Spectrum, Amiga, Macintosh, IBM PC, Amstrad. I mean, there was a port on the NES. This is a game that kind of ran all over the place. But it's easier just to say Apple II and other. So, I hold here, in my eager hands, the box. Well, I mean, it's not really a box. It's one of those three-paneled folding folios typical of Electronic Arts games of the period. And yes, it is an EA game itself. But for simplicity's sake, I'm going to call this a box. You can kind of hear my air quotes around that, can't you? So, suitably, the box is printed in only black and white. Very fitting for the game and the theme. No color, all monochrome. And I think it is a theme. It's a theme of, I don't know, duality? Conflict? Intolerance? Michael Jackson? I'm really not sure, but there's definitely something to do with opposites. There's black and white, but no color. There's, you know, the good and the bad, but no the ugly. I guess there was a chance maybe it was just cheaper to print it this way, but I'm pretty sure they were going for some sort of theme. So, when you open up the box, the first thing that strikes you, and strikes you hard, here, let me open it up here. Oh, I just got struck hard. It's the photo. Photo of the developers. There's three of them. John Freeman, Paul Reich, I think it's pronounced Reich, Paul Reich III, and Anne Westfall. Full page, black and white photo of them staring into the camera. And underneath it says, behind the light, behind the dark. And the photo really does live up to the pretentiousness of that slogan. Okay, how do I describe this photo? I'm going to paint a word picture for you. There's a single hard spotlight from the one side only. That's all the light, just this one harsh spotlight. It's sort of like a Caravaggio painting, except with none of the color and none of the Jesus. So there's three heads, three black turtlenecks, and no smiles. It's like something straight out of an arena rock album sleeve, and it's a deliciously 80s portrait. There is no way that software would come out with something like this nowadays, but I love it. Actually, you know, come to think of it, a lot of software in the 80s came with photos of the developers. I mean, sometimes little squares, but often like full, big photos taking up a lot of the art, and with the developers and like game related costumes and that kind of stuff. Did you ever notice that? Someone should do like a gallery of that sort of thing. Get on it, would you? Let me know when it's up. And so anyway, the back of the box, quote unquote, says the following: Archon, the light and the dark. There's a board. There are pieces with varying powers, squares to move into and an opponent to conquer. But the squares keep changing, and once you decide where to attack, the board explodes into a battlefield. Your pieces include phoenixes, golems, and wizards, and they use all their strange powers when they fight the banshees, goblins, and sorceresses they face. They cast spells and missiles. They pummel, pierce, and throw out flames. They move each other around, take on each other's shapes, and shriek at each other. If you square off on a spot that stays favorable, you'll be hard to kill. If you're smart, fast, dexterous, and farsighted, you may win. If you're not, look for another game. So, as you can imagine from all that, the game takes place on a kind of chessboard. But unlike the usual 8x8 grid, this game takes place on a 9x9 grid. So that is 17 more squares, he says confidently, having checked it with a calculator. So the two teams are divided very Star Wars-y into the light side and the dark side. Now the light side has one wizard, one genie, and one phoenix, and then there's a pair each of archers, golems, and valkyries. And then the front line, which is basically the pawns, though for the light side, those are knights. Now the dark side has equivalents to all those. There's one each of a sorceress, a dragon, and a shapeshifter. And those are backed up by a pair of manticores, trolls, and banshees. And then the light side pawns are goblins. So those are the two armies that are going to face off against each other. Which makes it sound more strategy. And it is a strategy game, but it's also an action game. It's sort of a mix of the two, and I really like the blend. So the game starts off similar to chess in appearance and like initial moves, but it's really only a superficial similarity. So each piece has a fixed number of squares that it can move, but movement doesn't have to be in a prescribed pattern. Not like chess, where you've got like a knight moves in a particular shape, but here you've just got movement, basically a movement score that you can spend for moving your characters, and each piece has a different number of places it can move. The pieces also have different modes of travel. Like they some go by ground, but others have flight or teleportation. And they also have different strengths. So which is more than just a power rating. They also have sort of different ways of attacking and different special skills, especially the pieces that you only have one or two of. So the biggest difference though between a game like this and, say, chess or checkers, is that the pieces don't automatically just capture each other when they land on an occupied square. Instead, they do mighty battle. Well, in my case, the battle was less mighty and more frantic joystick wiggling and clicking. But even though they're just doing frantic joystick wiggling and clicking battle, it's still pretty cool. So on the first board you start off on, the chessboard type grid, that's the strategy board. And there are some squares that are black and some squares that are white and some squares that fade back and forth between black and white. And when the pieces, like when white pieces battle on a white square, they have the advantage. And you guessed it, the opposite is true when you're battling on black squares. Then the black side has advantages. So it's about trying to not just pick a favorable matchup in power of the two pieces that are going to attack, but also try to get a favorable position on the board, because it can really swing the battle. So the battles themselves take place on a different board. When the two pieces meet on the strategy board, then they do battle in the arena. And that's where the frantic joystick wiggling and clicking comes in. So the frantic joystick, etc., is held in check a little bit by the fact that the various pieces have different attack intervals. It's not instantaneous. You don't just, you know, click and fire. The more powerful the attack, the more time it takes to do it. So, for instance, swinging a sword, one of the knights, that's really quick, but it's not very powerful. Whereas, say, conjuring up a massive fireball takes time, you know, even after a curry. So on the combat field, there are also obstacles. And these rise and fall throughout the battle to block you and block your shots, or sometimes just slow you down if they're not, you know, fully incarnate yet as they fade in and out. Now, the thing is, the powerful pieces will pretty much always defeat a weak one. So that's where fighting on your home turf color squares makes a big difference. But even with the weak ones almost always losing in a very uneven matchup, the damage you do stays, or the damage that gets done to your character stays on them throughout the game unless they're healed. So, for instance, a bunch of knights can whittle down a sorceress. So there's more strategy to it you can use multiple pieces and multiple steps to try to take out a large enemy piece. So far, not so complicated, right? That's why we add in the spells. Ha ha. So, you get everything from teleport to time shift to healing, but you only get one spell of each kind, so you have to be smart about when you're going to cast them. You can summon elementals, you can magically exchange two pieces on the strategy board, which can have a huge difference in the next battle. You can even zap an opponent into a magical prison. I mean, it all adds up to a game with a really nice blend, a nice balance of strategy and action. And I think people that like games of one or the other would find this appealing. So it's a nice mix, and it could maybe be something that you might, if you're really only an action guy and don't like strategy games or vice versa, it's still a game worth checking out because it has a good dollop of both of those elements. And I can totally see why this was so popular on so many platforms, by which I mean, you know, Apple and other. I really enjoyed playing this game. I mean, I only had vague memories of having played it back in the day, and I think I didn't have a boxed copy. This is one where I think it was found, is the word we'll use. But playing it now, it really held up to modern playing. I mean, the graphics, they're not great. But, you know, hey, when you look down at a chessboard in real life, the graphics aren't that great either, especially with my eyesight. The graphics are perfectly functional, however. I do think people without a nostalgic connection to 8-bit games might be put off by the graphics because they are so simplistic. And the same can probably be said by a lot of arcade-style games, especially home arcade-style games of the period. Anybody who would be completely dismissive of anything on an Atari isn't going to really dig this because there's not a lot happening graphically. But the gameplay is excellent. And I found the graphics to be, you know, completely suitable, that you understand what the various pieces are. There's never a confusion about which one's which. And that's really all that you need from the graphics in this game. So I thought they were perfectly acceptable. The game sold really well back in the day, as the kids say, and it spawned some sequels and follow-ups and remakes, and later games that had similar elements, like Battle Chess. Battle Chess being really more two-player oriented and having, I think, an online component. And as far as I remember, there was recently an attempt to bring Battle Chess back through Kickstarter, but it failed. And I didn't contribute because it was one of those things where people asking for money and going to put out a game on no platforms to actually play on. That was sillily short-sighted of them. But with Archon, the legacy really has already lived on. I mean, you can go to the iTunes store now and buy not one, but two different versions of this game for iOS. There's one by React, which is a moderny looking version that was released back in 2009. And there's also a 2012 version that was released by Elite Systems. And you can get that either as a standalone app or as part of the Elite Collection app that which I think has come out, although it was endlessly delayed, it seems. And that version, the Elite one, seems to be much more true to its 8-bit roots, but it's in a ZX Spectrum way rather than the one true platform. As much fun as the iOS versions are, or at least appeared to be, because I haven't actually played them, I would recommend that you nab one of the easily accessible Apple II disk images instead, because then you can just grab an emulator, grab a joystick, grab a friend, apologize for where you just grabbed the friend, and then give the game a try. I mean, I think you'll really dig it. This is a good game. Those of you who have stuck with 1 MHz over the years and the long, long gaps sometimes between shows, you will anticipate that we've come to the part of the show where I tell you to jot down your name and drop it into the cartoon head cookie jar so you can win a copy of this game. Well, you're wrong. Ha! And you're wrong for two reasons. Actually, you're wrong for at least two reasons. Among the many reasons why you are wrong are the following. I actually borrowed this copy of a game from someone else, so I can't give it away. Well, I mean, I guess I could give it away. I'm kind of tempted to give it away. What do you think, voice in my head?
No, I will not give it away.
No, it's prom night all over again.
Hello, can I help you?
Yeah, where are we?
Well, you're standing inside an Apple IIe microcomputer.
And who are you?
I'm Bruce Tognazzini. I'm an engineer with Apple Computer, and I'm here to check out and make sure everything is perfect on this computer, because we have a report that in just a few seconds here, one of our owners is going to be turning this computer on.
And what is all this stuff?
Well, these are the parts that make up an Apple computer. That particular chip that you're standing on
is
called the microprocessor, and it's the pretty much the heart of the computer, kind of the moderator of the talk show that goes on. And these two chips down here, these are very important ROM chips, which have the built-in basic language and the very kernel of the operating system. And then these eight chips out here are the RAM chips, and they hold the information that comes in from the disk drive and that the user types and the programs and so forth.
Bruce, we're trying to figure out what an operating system does, and maybe you could help explain it.
Well, sure. An operating system essentially runs the entire computer once it's come in, but right now it hasn't turned on. Although I see the user's about to flick on the switch. It's all right. It's only about 12 volts. The power light goes on, and then the little microprocessor here has the job of checking itself out and then turning control over to this ROM chip. This ROM chip, in turn, has a very small program which goes back to the back of the computer and checks out and sees whether it can find a disk controller card, which of course it can because there's one plugged in here. And on the disk controller card is another ROM, and this ROM now takes control from that one and begins to bring in the disk operating system off the disk drive through this white cable. You probably saw the disk drive while you were on your way in here. And then that comes down and starts filling in these RAM chips here. Fills up about a fifth to a quarter of the RAM chips with the disk operating system. It brings in any language and perhaps any program the user wants to do. And after about 15 to 30 seconds, it's all done. The screen gives a message to the user, and then the user can go to work.
By the time this episode comes out, I will have wandered my eager way down to Kansas City, Missouri, for this year's Kansas Fest, the summer camp for geeks. I mean, if the schedule holds, then I am at Kansas Fest right now. And that means it's been a year since I've podcasted. Holy cow. I mean, I've been doing the Retro Computing Roundtable every 3 weeks, and that is oodles of fun. And I've been keeping up an almost weekly schedule for Double Take, and that is also oodles of fun, metric oodles. But it's been about a year since you and I gathered together around the green phosphor screen, and I blathered on about some Apple II game and tried to sneak a song title past you. Oh, speaking of which, did you spot the song title this time? I get tons of email from people asking if I really do work the song titles into the show. And yes, it is true. If you listen, they are there to spot. I sometimes try to hide them quite well. This time, I think it's really easy. In fact, I will start making it even easier. Maybe what I'll do is I'll replay that section after the final credit music and then a bit of the song. So a little bit of proof for you. So I'm going to start doing that. Spoiler. spoiler alert, so don't listen after the music if you don't want to know where the secret words are. So anyway, the point of this bit of blathering was supposed to be this. Whether you stay subscribed this whole time, or you're a returning subscriber, or even a first-time listener, I can't thank you enough for letting me dance on your eardrums this way. I really, really do appreciate the fact that people take the time to listen to these things. And I have been historically terrible at getting back to you email-wise. I'm still trying to work on that, but I thought I'd take this opportunity to thank everybody who listens and who writes in and that kind of stuff. It does mean a whole bunch to me. So I will see you in a couple of weeks for the next 1 MHz, and then I'll be able to tell you all about the fun from this year's Kansas Fest. And in fact, I hope to see some of you there. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to 1 MHz, an Apple II podcast, and feedback to the show can be emailed to feedback@monsterfeet.com. And like all Monsterfeet productions, the original bits in this show have been released to the public domain. There are also obstacles, and these rise and fall throughout the battle to block you and block your show. Casey Street in the afternoon. Once again, it's over too soon. Being here again, I can't recall. Forgotten moments, the rise and fall. Being here again, I can't recall. Forgotten moments.